We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Kind of live with us right now. I don't even try some of these questions with other people, Al, because this is an in-depth, deep-thinking style columnist.
Who didn't play in the NFL.
He didn't play, but I'll bet he could. The great Mike Sielski of TheAcquirer.com. Hi, Mike.
But I could have, Al. I'm 165 pounds of romping, stomping dynamite.
I'll tell you. Great mobility, right, Mike?
Exactly. Great mobility.
All right, Mike, one of the things I was wondering in your line of work now, because of social media and all, is there more of a temptation to give a hot take because it'll travel across the social media better? Do you get that sense? Maybe today I should call for the firing of Matt Klentak, that kind of thing?
I think, yes. I think there is that temptation that you want to be part of the conversation and that you have to raise the volume on your opinion or your take or whatever the case may be to try to get noticed. I have to admit it's something I try to fight quite a bit.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be that guy. I want to be a little more thoughtful, or at least try to be.
Yeah, I've sensed that in the way you do it. The other thing I wondered about, since you did take a little break from sports to cover the pandemic, did it change your perspective in how you cover sports?
Actually, not that much. I think the thing that's been the biggest change is the fact that it's so rare now that we get to interact with these coaches and players and executives in anything other than Zoom calls. And that's the thing I miss the most, is being able to work a locker room, get a guy by yourself, you know, try to find out what's really going on, talk to him or her about something that nobody else is talking to him or her about. You can't do that now. You get on a Zoom call with 50 other media members, everybody's getting the same answers to the same questions. And that, to me, has been the biggest change and drawback.
That's fascinating. So if you wanted to do a story on Whiteside or somebody that wasn't a main part of what that was going on with the Eagles, you would not be able to get a one-on-one with him, Mike, under these conditions?
I could try. I could ask. Then it would be up to the Eagles to grant that, as opposed to, like, catching him in the locker room and saying, hey, JJ, do you have a minute? And then occupying his time for the next 20 minutes while I pepper him with questions.
Yeah, but that's a different – face-to-face is always easier, isn't it?
Isn't it
than going on a computer, right?
No, I think to a degree, these teams in all these sports love the fact that all these interviews are on Zoom, because they can control how long they last, who they allow to speak, what they're allowed to say. I mean, Carson Wentz was available for, 8 minutes the other day.
Yeah.
So the idea of, like, probing him deeply for what has gone wrong in these first two games, it's almost off the table. You can't do it.
Do the leagues ever kind of think that this is the reason there's been so little buzz? I mean, there's no preseason. So I heard somebody said, I didn't really get into it till the second. You know, the constant feeding of the media from that pre-COVID, I think, add it to the buzz factor, which is not there.
I agree with you completely, Rhea, and I hope that the leagues pick up on this and notice this. I think that is the big reason that enthusiasm has been muted and tamped down for the NFL. I think it's a big reason why ratings are down in all these sports. People love to follow this stuff for a million different reasons, and the way they do it is because the way they're able to do it is because we are there every day. We're there every day for Eagles training camp. You get four preseason games. There's a build-up to it. There was no build-up this year. You know, nobody could see practice. There was no video of it on ESPN or NBC Sports Philadelphia or any of those places. And all of a sudden, the season begins. It's like, oh, okay, I guess football's here. And I think you see the same thing in the NBA, to a degree with the NHL and Major League Baseball.
So with less help from the athletes and the coaches themselves, I got to still ask you, what are you seeing when you're looking at Carson Wentz right now, Mike?
I'm seeing a lot of different things. I'm seeing a quarterback who doesn't seem entirely sure of where he's supposed to be going with the ball. His mechanics are off, as a number of people have pointed out. My colleague Paul Domowicz, for instance, has a really good piece on Inquirer.com now, where he talked to Dan Orlovsky from ESPN about how Wentz's lower half is like an upside down V. And when your legs are like that, you're going to throw high all the time. And that's what we see from Carson a lot. I see weapons that aren't as good as the ones he had back in 2017. Where's LeGarrette Blount? Where's Jay Ajayi? Where's a power running game that can help move the ball? I see an offensive line in flux that didn't play as badly in week two, but is still kind of uncertain. I see not a lot of good stuff.
Is there room for empathy when you know that the guy's a good guy? Carson's a good guy, but he's playing terribly. Does he tend to get a better, analysis of him from columnists, from people like us, because we know he's a good guy?
I think that probably plays into it, too. It's funny. I've always maintained that about Pete Rose when he played, was that he was such a good quote and was so happy to talk to any baseball writer anywhere that it covered up the fact that he was one of the world's worst human beings ever.
It's true.
That does go a long way. And I think that's only human nature. If a guy is willing to talk to you and treat you like a human being, or that you know he's a good person off the field, your perspective on him gets changed. And I think, it's not just Carson we look at that way, too. I mean, Nick Foles is the same way. It's not just that Nick Foles won the Super Bowl for the Eagles. It's that everybody regards him as such a good guy, and he is such a good guy, so that, even when he played badly in, say, that playoff game against the Saints a couple years ago, people were quicker to say, oh, well, Nick won us the Super Bowl, or Nick's a good guy. It's a shame he couldn't pull it out.
Mike, what is your sense on what will happen and what should happen to Phillies GM Matt Klentak?
I think I'm tending a little bit more to the he may not be back side, because I think John Middleton, I think it took a lot for John Middleton. This is just my read of the situation. I think it took a lot for him to stay as patient as he stayed throughout the rebuild. I don't think that's his instinct. I think he's got more of George Steinbrenner and Ed Snyder in him than he would really publicly like to admit. And I think that if they don't make the playoffs this year, Middleton's instinct is going to be to make as many changes as he can. I still remember that the after game six of the 09 series, that's our bleeping trophy and we want to get it back. And it's been what, 11 years since they got it back and that they haven't been able to get it back. And my feel is there's going to be change ahead. I have no evidence to suggest that. I'm just basing that reading, John Middleton and the little bit of interacted with him over the last decade.
All right, but if they do make the playoffs, which they have a 50% chance to, according to analytics right now, does Klentak survive?
I'm not sure about that. I think it would be easier, obviously, to say, okay, we made some progress and we made the playoffs, but I'm not 100% sure of that. I think Middleton is cut from that Snyder, Steinbrenner cloth, and I think he's got kind of an itchy trigger finger there when it comes to, all right, if it's not working out, let's make some changes here. I think his instinct is not to rebuild slowly the way that they had tried to do from like 2015 through 2018.
All right, Mike, let me move you over to Sixers for a second, because it sounds like they really want to hire Mike D'Antoni, but D'Antoni would like to bring James Harden here, and that would cost the Sixers either Ben or Joel. Do you want D'Antoni, and are you willing to really abandon the process and get rid of one of your young building blocks?
Well, here's the thing. If you're going to get James Harden, I don't know if I like that idea. And, I just don't. I mean, you're going to pile up a lot of regular season stats, and then come the playoffs, you're going to have kind of the inverted problem that the Sixers have had the last couple of years. You're not going to have enough diversity on offense, when the game slows down to be able to really compete for a championship. The part of the D'Antoni thing that I can't wrap my head around is, there's kind of this lurking presumption, it seems to me, that if they hire D'Antoni, they're going to be open to trading Joel Embiid, because Embiid is the obvious guy who wouldn't fit in the kind of system that D'Antoni wants to run. He wants to run and gun. He wants to shoot threes. That's not Embiid. Embiid doesn't run the floor well, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is the entire NBA would know that. And so the idea that you're going to get back in trading Joel Embiid enough players, enough high-quality players who play the way you need them to play to run D'Antoni's system, it seems, you know, I don't think that would happen. Every other team in the NBA would know, well, they've got to trade Embiid because he doesn't fit. So why would we give them, why would we give away the kind of players you need to win in today's NBA to get the kind of player that you don't need to win in today's NBA? So I'm not a big fan of the idea of D'Antoni as the head coach. I'm just not.
All right. I think once you're remaking the roster for Mike D'Antoni, you're making a mistake. That's where I am on it.
Yeah.
One last thing, Mike. Of the four major sports in this city, which one's organization is most dysfunctional?
I think the Sixers. I absolutely think the Sixers. Wow. I think the Sixers had a real opportunity to build something that was going to be terrific and lasting, and they totally, totally squandered it. You know, I really do. I think, again, you and I have argued about this before. I think Sam Hinkie had set them up to be in a great position, and they took that opportunity and they balled it up into a piece. You know, they wadded it up and threw it in the trash can, as far as I'm concerned. And to me, they're the ones that I have the least faith in.
Well, now I agree with you, Mike. So it took a while, but I came around on it. Mike, great stuff as always. Read them every day in the Inquirer, Inquirer.com. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Angela.
Great insights. Those are not hot takes, but they're very well thought out takes.
Mm-hmm. We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.